This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I am Nkosinathi Ndlovu, and this is the Tech Central Show brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and services, and we thank them for partnering with the show to bring you these great interviews. Cryptocurrencies are increasingly moving beyond just investment assets to find real-world use cases in everyday contexts. To facilitate this shift, crypto payment specialist Money Badger recently signed a deal with fintech Scan2Pay, allowing crypto wallet users to pay at more than 650,000 stores nationwide. Here to give more insight into what this means for cryptocurrency platforms, their users, and the broader economy are Money Badger CEO Karel van Wyk and Luno CEO Christo de Wit. Gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nati.
Thanks for having us.
Awesome. It's really great that I get to have both of you here, because I think my first question has to do with just understanding this ecosystem that you play in. You've got Scan2Pay, I think, as probably the merchant-facing business here. And then you've got platforms like Luno, which bring the customers into the stores. And then, Karel, you've got Money Badger there as well. Could you just give me an overview of what each player in this ecosystem, what function they serve?
Okay. Are you asking me or Christy?
Yes, please, please, Karel, you can go ahead.
Okay. So maybe I can start with Money Badger. As you introduced us, we are a crypto payments provider. We like to call ourselves a Bitcoin payment provider because our mission is to make Bitcoin money as it was originally intended. And we see ourselves as a network player. So the idea is that we are like a neutral party, really, in the system. And we, on the one hand, we connect all these merchant providers like Scan2Pay. And then on the other hand, we connect all the wallet providers like Luno. Of course, Luno is a very close partner for us and very important. So I'm very glad to be here with Christo on the show. And that's essentially what we are. We're this little piece of glue that's connecting the crypto ecosystem to the physical and online merchant and retail ecosystem in South Africa.
Okay. And then, Christo, if you could elaborate on that, then you are the one bringing the users.
I think so. I think that's right. Thanks. And as Karel mentioned, I think what is important also, Karel has very deep roots with Luno. He's originally one of the original founders of Luno as well. And with Luno, I think what we bring to the table is, as you mentioned, the huge retail consumer base that we've had. And I think if you look at the history of Luno being one of the first cryptocurrency platforms in South Africa that made it possible for South Africans to invest in Bitcoin with South African rands, all the way back in 2013, we've now amassed such a huge customer base that pretty much, you know, the majority of South Africans that have touched crypto or currently holds crypto have done so through Luno. And that has made it possible, I think, to bring this use case of crypto payments to a much broader and wider audience. And I think that's the next step in this crypto evolution that we see playing out.
Yes. So talking about that, because I mean, there's a host of cryptocurrencies out there. Yes, Bitcoin may be the most prominent and well-known, but you now support payments through a variety of cryptocurrencies, and then you settle in rands immediately. Surely that cannot be easy to facilitate. And does it require liquidity in rand somewhere in the system? How do you make it happen?
Yeah, so maybe something that we really appreciate from these new technologies is that it actually enables very rapid settlement, different from bank settlements that can take days. I mean, we have real-time clearing systems now. That's very nice. They tend to be bit more expensive. But so essentially what this allows us to do is to limit one of the problems in the payment space, which is counterparty risk. And counterparty risk essentially is that time period where you are, as the payment provider, waiting for funds to flow from the source, let's call it a wallet or an account, into your estate so that you can then settle it to the merchant. On Rand settlement, we don't do immediate settlement at the moment. We found that the merchants actually prefer batch settlement. So they actually like to aggregate a day's worth of transactions, and then we settle them the next morning. And then as for the complexity of this whole thing, there's a lot of complexity from the technology point of view, volatility management, and then the serving the merchant well, so ensuring that they have proper accounting and reconciliation, and just basically putting the customer first and ensuring that they have a good experience. It is a complex problem, but we've been working on this for years and years, and we think that we have a winning formula.
Christo, I think on your end, with the consumer, since settlement is done immediately, what does that mean in the case where reversals perhaps need to be done?
So I think what is important is that, so we all obviously want to offer a service that is convenient and that instills trust, right? So from a technical point of view, Cardle would be best placed to speak about the process. But at the end of the day, when we bring a product such as this to our customers, we want to continue on building on that level of trust that is associated with Luno and the convenience, right? So we need to make it possible to them to obviously do a refund as well, right? So we do transfer or transact or process refunds rather. And I think that is very important that customers are aware of this. And that they fully understand that, you know, which wallet they use for these crypto payments, that, you know, it's in a familiar setup or style that they have grown accustomed to with normal fiat payments as well.
Just on that front, we see reversals and refunds as a first-class feature of our network. It's something that is actually quite hard to do, but we are structured in a way that we do facilitate that. And I think maybe the one distinction to make there is that with a refund, instead of engaging your card provider, if you're making card payment, in this case, you will be engaging the merchant.
Okay. All right. Okay. And then just going back to that idea that this represents a shift from keeping crypto as an asset to using it now transactionally daily. Christo, because you are more on the user side, do you find that there has to be a mindset shift with some people in terms of getting used to the fact that I can use this now as I can cash?
Yeah, I think there are two schools of thought. So you get your crypto natives that got in quite early, that people that really believe in cryptocurrency, and they see cryptocurrency as a solution for all the challenges that the traditional finance and payment system have brought, right? So now these payments bring them that utility that they can actually utilize their crypto in an additional format as opposed to just investing or as a speculative asset. Then you get the more skeptical side, to go exactly to your point, where they see crypto more as being volatile, speculative investment, or as an alternative digital asset rather than something that has real world utility. That takes a little bit of convincing, but I think if you approach it in a way to say that, okay, how do you approach the volatility side? So if you want to de-risk from perhaps, you know, Bitcoin payments or other cryptocurrency payments that are seen as volatile, you know, you can also pay with stable coins. So stable coins have a lot less volatility because it's pegged to a real world asset, to a fiat currency, in our case, USDC or USDT. And then there are a lot of incentive campaigns. So, USDT, Tether, you know, has approached us to also drive this adoption by offering incentives in order to use USDT or Tether for payments. And that all helps in bridging that gap where you see crypto as more of a asset class that you invest in as something that now brings that utility for payments.
Okay. And then, Carl, on the merchant side, I mean, what benefit does a merchant see in terms of incorporating crypto payments into the services that they offer for their customers?
In general, we see kind of, let's say, two classes of merchants, and it's actually similar, maybe the inverse of the consumer side, where we see most consumers engaging with crypto as an asset and then some using it for payment. With the merchants, you can enable crypto payments acceptance and receive ZAR settlement or RAND settlement. In that case, there's a couple of benefits. One is that you are connecting to a new market It's a growing market, and we know that there are people with a lot of balances to spend that your competitors might not be connected to. So mm-hmm. new markets, it's a very different risk model. I think people think that it's more risky, but in fact, the opposite is true. There's no chargeback risk, for example. The consumer is protected by things like biometrics instead of just having a number. Maybe that can be, you know, stolen. So there's some different aspects to it that I think are beneficial to those merchants that just want to accept. But then there are also like a smaller portion of merchants that decided that they actually want to receive settlement in Bitcoin and stable tokens for various reasons. Maybe they want to hedge against Rand depreciation for whatever reason, or they see that Bitcoin has good upside, and they typically, it might be like an owner-run store, and they want to accumulate Bitcoin. One of the ways that they can do this is by both accepting the payment and the settlement in Bitcoin.
Okay. And then I'm not sure who's best to place to answer this. Maybe Crystal, because again, you are more closer to the consumer. If a person now is perhaps wasn't a Bitcoin or a cryptocurrency investor before, but they see this transactional use case as useful, what kind of tax implications must they think about if they want to hold this and use it all the time?
Yeah, I think, that's always a question that comes up. And as we know, I mean, first and foremost, I'm not a tax advisor, so not in a position to give any tax advice. So, I mean, at Luno, we always implore our customers and our users and our investors to make sure that they are on top of the tax implications of their crypto investments and then their crypto usage. But we are very clear in that SARS has made it a very bold statement that crypto assets are taxable and the usage of crypto is taxable. How that is taxed is obviously still determined by SARS, whether it's income tax or capital gains tax, but crypto payments as a whole are seen as taxable events, right? And I think that's something that you need to be aware of as you go into this space.
So there is software available that connects to your wallet. It can connect to your Luno wallet, for example, that is specialized accounting software for you to track your tax liability and provide you with the calculations. And what I always recommend people who start to engage with this as a means of payment, meaning it becomes a bigger part of your life, is that you sign up for one of these software packages and you use it, and then, you know, it's actually a very simple solution. And I think also there are two things that I make people aware of. If you are paying tax on a crypto transaction, on a payment, that means you've come out ahead. It means you've actually seen a growth in the value of that asset, and you were able to purchase more goods than you would have been if it was a Rand transaction. So people seem to be afraid of paying capital gains, for example. And then I tell them, you should be happy when you pay capital gains. It means you're winning.
Because you got something at the end of the day. Yeah,
you got something extra.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then I think this is for both of you. How do you see crypto payments becoming more commonplace, helping drive financial inclusion?
Okay, sure. Okay, that's two questions. How are we seeing crypto become more commonplace? How are we seeing it drive financial inclusion? So in terms of it becoming more commonplace, I suppose what would drive adoption would be unique incentives. And Christo alluded to that. He mentioned that there's been some campaigns that Luna has run in conjunction with some token issuers like Tether. In fact, there was a Pick and Pay campaign with Luna and Tether in December last year, and we see massive uptake when these special campaigns run. And there's a lot of scope, I think, to provide these sort of unique rewards and incentives and campaigns to crypto wallet customers. So I think maybe that might be like a good driver. In terms of financial inclusion, I tend to take a bit of a philosophical approach there, and I look at the original title of the Bitcoin white paper that describes it as an electronic cash system. And so my view is that there's nothing more financially inclusive than cash, essentially, unless we can start to switch over to an electronic cash system, because then the reach is even more than physical cash. Mm-hmm. And so my view is that especially with things like Bitcoin Lightning, it's very accessible, and we can start to drive that electronic cash use case, and that's ultimate or radical financial inclusivity. I think maybe too radical or too inclusive for some people's like, but that is the that is the fact.
Okay, thank you, Carl. Christo, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's Carl's a tough act to follow on that one, because I think all of us in the crypto space, we buy into that philosophical worldview, right? I think the Bitcoin white paper is so core to everything that we do and why we are in this industry, because it solves for a fundamental problem that whether we see in the world. I think the growth of crypto payments, as Carl mentioned, any new thing, anything that's novel, will take time to grow in adoption. Incentives definitely is one way of driving that, but I think also then availability. And that's what Carl and Money Badger are doing so well, is crossing that bridge and making crypto payments available on a much wider network. Mm-hmm. In terms of financial inclusion, I think, when we look at South Africa versus the rest of the continent, it is a little bit different. South Africa has got a very large banked population, but I don't think you should hide behind those numbers, because the majority of South Africans use their bank accounts purely as a quick cash in, cash out system, right? So, so monies are transferred into the bank accounts. As soon as it hit the bank account, it's immediately withdrawn for cash. So then to transfer over to that electronic cash system that Carl referenced, I think that is going to drive much broader financial inclusion, because all you basically need is a mobile phone and an internet connection. And that enables you access to this electronic cash payment system that is much more inclusive than, a bank that is limited to bank branches and all of the red tape that comes with it. So that level of adoption and financial inclusion is only possible by fully buying into what, the ethos of crypto stands for.
And then just in terms of these payments, who is charged for the transaction? Is it the same as a card payment, for example, where the merchant would be the one who takes on the small fee that's charged there?
Yeah, at the moment, our model is a merchant pays model. So we are a merchant services provider, and therefore we charge the merchant for the service. There are different tiers. So typically, if a merchant does more volume, then the fee rate is reduced.
Okay. Similar. I think just getting into a more broader discussion, we know that there was a stable coins act released in the US recently. South Africa does not have similar legislation as yet, but I mean, looking at the local market and uptake on your platform, do you think that the market is rife for some kind of stablecoin legislation in South Africa?
Yeah, I'll take that one. I think definitely. I think when we look at where regulation is going, and especially with the Reserve Bank, they're already working on stablecoin legislation. I think, it's interesting. The US tends to kind of lead the thinking in terms of regulation and governance at this stage with crypto. I think that's obviously just related to the pro-crypto stance of the current administration in the US. South Africa, even though we tend to, and the rest of the world, we tend to follow what is happening in the US, I think what is also important to note that our regulators do not always look to the US for guidance. They sometimes look, I think, more to the UK and Europe. And I think that's an important thing. We know that the regulation in Europe is a little bit different to that in the US. But our regulators are looking at introducing a more formal stablecoin regulatory framework in terms of the issuance of stablecoins, specifically related perhaps to a rand-backed stablecoin. But when we get to that space, and when we perhaps see the growth and the launch of more widely adopted rand-based stablecoins, I think we'll definitely see a far greater adoption as well, because then you have a currency that you are familiar with, and it's just basically on the blockchain, and that would drive that adoption even further.
And then I think my last question relates to Pay Inc., formerly Bankserve Africa. They're working with the Reserve Bank, wanting to bring non-bank players into kind of the payment settlement system. Considering that crypto, you seem to already have immediate settlement, you already have interoperability between cryptocurrencies and fiat, the rand. Are these moves beneficial to you as crypto asset service providers? Do you plan to participate? I don't know, Carl, can I start with you on this one?
Yes, sure. Mm. Yeah. So I think that the whole payments industry is aware of the fact that there will be significant changes coming. Not only are we seeing the introduction of, like you said, government associated entity like Pay Inc. Playing in the payment space, essentially, there's also significant regulatory changes and opportunities that will be coming in the next years. And something I think that we might see is a significant increase in the number of fintechs and wallet providers that serving customers where they're at, that better understand a specific consumer and market segment and then serving that segment really well. But ultimately, everything that introduces efficiencies like new technologies, like this rapid payment system, PayShap, I think it's just another channel. So long answer short, essentially, I think that's just another option that we will integrate into our network, and it'll be great for settlement. It'll be great for consumer services, and so for me, I think it will present good and interesting opportunities in the future.
Okay, thank you, Crystal.
Yeah, no, I mean, I fully agree. I think Carl summed up everything perfectly. I don't have any more additional insights to add on that point.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Before we conclude, I wonder, are there any points regarding crypto payments that you think we haven't covered?
There's some questions that I'm surprised you didn't ask. Like, for example, who's actually making crypto payments?
Okay. Please tell me more. Who is?
And yeah, well, so I think maybe both... both of us would have interesting perspectives there. So from Money Badger's perspective, if we're asking who are the people that are actually spending their Bitcoin and other crypto at retailers or spending it on luxury goods and services like, you know, tourism and accommodation, there's sort of broadly a number of classes of consumer, and they are very interesting in their own right. So the first one that we've identified are people that's actually earning Bitcoin and crypto. They've connected to service providers. I think globally, ultimately, this being a highly inclusive system, it's not only regionally inclusive, it's globally inclusive. Mm. And so that means that somebody sitting in South Africa has the ability to connect to a global market. They can serve global employers, and they can get paid instantly in their token of choice, whether it's a stable or Bitcoin. We also see nonprofits that's being funded with Bitcoin. For example, the Bitcoin Ikazi project in Mossel Bay, there's some surf school there. They pay the coaches and the kids in Bitcoin, and that's what they spend. So we're seeing spending from people that's earning it. And then we're seeing people with long-term savings. So that means they've seen a lot of growth in their savings. Maybe that's all the savings that they have. There are some crazy people like that that only have Bitcoin, and then that's what they spend. And then the third class, I think, which is at this stage a bit smaller, but it might grow, would be international tourists. So actually, when a tourist arrives in South Africa, you might think that they would prefer card spending because it's ubiquitous, but some of them tend to be very risk averse. They've heard of South Africa being a risky country, and so they actually end up preferring not to use their cards. And when they have the option to spend with a global currency, then that's something that some of them do.
Interesting. Can you tell me about perhaps average spend that you see on your platform, or even the highest spend that you've seen?
Okay. Average is a very interesting number, because I'm going to give you the average transaction size that we see, which is 450 Rand. Okay. And that sounds low, but it's actually, if we say the median, so in other words, most transactions are actually under 300 Rand. So most transactions tend to be very small. It's in the, you know, the realm of cash type volume. And then there are some transactions that are quite large. So these would be municipal bill payments typically, or like I said, airplane tickets, travel, accommodation. And then this would be more in the range of thousands of rands, 10,000 rand. And I think with some of these online payment gateways that we've integrated recently, we're seeing even larger transactions for e-commerce shopping. But the vast majority of transactions are small, and they're all over South Africa. It's not only in specific regions. We're seeing in broadly across South Africa these high number of transactions, 450 Rand and less, 300 Rand and less.
Okay. Christo, are you seeing similar patterns on Luno?
Yeah, I think our average basket size is a little bit bigger. We're seeing just over 600 Rand for the average basket size, but then to Carl's point, the median basket is around 175 Rand. In terms of what people are using for, what we're using crypto payments for, what are they buying? I think that's very interesting. I think Carl summed it up very nice in the different classes. And it really does range from literally going to Pick and Pay, you know, a basket of groceries, to even paying the utility bills at the Pick and Pay kiosk, to all the way from, you know, having their pizza delivery paid with via Zappa payments, as well as airplane tickets. We see, you know, a prominent electronic store where people actually go and buy their electronic goods using their crypto. So it's really, really a vast range. I think also in terms of the overall usage that we're seeing from Luno, you know, whenever you introduce something new, you would think that, you know, there's a lot of time and mental capacity necessary to do this. So you would expect when people have more free time, that's when they would use their crypto payments. And here you tend to see it maybe over Saturdays, Sundays, over the weekends.
Yes.
But from our data, the payment activity on Saturdays and Sundays are only marginally higher than we see throughout the week. So that to me speaks that this group of customers and investors that have adopted crypto payments are really utilizing this as in every facet of their life. And it's become, you know, part of the way that they see, you know, the way of using money. And then, I mean, literally our basket size, it stretches from the smallest basket we've had with 99 cents, 1 Rand, all the way up to, you know, multiple thousands of rands, you know, was the biggest one. I don't want to divulge the exact amount in fear of giving something away. But, yes. And I mean, we see it active. It's still relatively small in comparison with the overall number of customers we have at Luno, but we see that growing month on month. It continues to grow. More customers are adopting it. And the number of payments completed is just, you know, compounding every single month more and more and more. So that's really a positive sign. And the fact that people can utilize this now with the expansion of where you can pay in every facet of the life to also signals to us that, you know, this was the right move. I'll maybe, you know, give some a little bit of an anecdote. When we first integrated with Money Badger and that first Pick and Pay payment was possible, we live streamed it to the entire Luno team because it was such a significant milestone. And you know, one of you know, the key people at Luno that worked on this actually went into Pick and Pay and, you know, purchased a box of Omar Rusks, right? Because what is more typical South African than a box of box of Rusks? So I think coming from there to where we are now and how we see it growing and how Money Badger is just absolutely expanding the number of merchants that accept crypto payments, I think the future is very promising.
Okay, excellent. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time and hope to speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nati.